today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Andy, do you know how to play any Tom Petty songs on your guitar? Like, I don't know, Free Fallin'?
No, but I know how to play another song by a great American artist.
We both lie silent, stealing in the dead of night. But we lie close together, it feels miles apart inside. Was it something I said or something I did? Did my words not come?
Okay, Patrick, remember yesterday we were talking about Tom Petty.
Yeah, it was cool.
The 1 year anniversary of his death, sadly enough. Yeah. And we had on John Scott, who was a record promoter. And I would encourage everyone, if you are starting with this episode, to go back one. Go to yesterday's episode. You
really
do.
Yeah.
So we had him on the phone. It was thanks to our friend Craig Rosen who got him on the phone. And this guy has a really compelling story about how he helped really like break Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm.
And the first part of the story, he tells a story about how he was working a John Mellencamp or that time Johnny Cougar album. Yep. And he actually got in some hot water with his boss, and he ended up getting fired from one record label.
Right.
And then he caught on with another record label, and that's where we're picking up the story here today.
Right.
This is Tom Petty's record label. And this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And what you're going to hear where we pick up this story is that John is at the new record label.
Right.
And he's just started getting a start, and he's going through this like stack of records, and he hears something that really catches his ear.
Right. Plus, you know, to me, he'd learned his lesson. Right.
Well,
early on in his career, we think he knew what he did wrong.
So now we're going to find out, did he really learn that lesson or not? And one other thing I want to say before we hear this, before we play this tape, when we recorded this a year ago, we also had Phil Ingrassia with us.
Yes, we did.
And I think you're going to hear his voice sort of at the end of this tape that we play, where he's talking about being a kid and working in a pizza place.
Oh, that was great.
Just so you get that. All right, let's roll tape. Here's John Scott.
Opened to pull the record out as a white label, no information whatsoever. And I put it on, and I heard Rockin' Around With You. And then I heard Breakdown. And then I heard, you know, every classic song on there. I was literally in a trance listening to that. So I said, I'm going to put headphones on and listen, make sure I'm not hearing something or whatever I smoked at lunch. And anyway, I put it on headphones, and at that point, I was like a zombie. I walked into Charlie's office. I said, Charlie, who are these guys? And he dropped the needle on the turntable. He said, that's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. John, we're dropping them. The record's been out for 8 months. Nothing's happened. We've sold 12,000 copies. He's a punk. This is a punk band. And he said, they're a punk band. Look at this guy. He's got a black leather jacket on, bullets around his neck, long stringy hair. I said, Charlie, you haven't listened to the record. This is not a punk record. rock and roll record. Well, we're dropping him anyway. So I got on my knees and begged him to give me 6 weeks to try to get airplay because I knew I could do it. I knew what I had heard. And he said no at first. And I said, Charlie, I am begging you to give me a chance. He looked at me and said, okay, you got 6 weeks. The clock's ticking right now. You better start moving. And so actually, he told me, John, if you can get this record played, I'll kiss your butt on Sunset Strip. I'll throw you a party at my house in Malibu. And he started laughing. And I didn't care anything about that. I just knew that he had given me a chance to work a record that had put me in a trance. And so I started calling radio stations around that time. And most everybody I talked to said, no, never heard of this guy. And I kept trying to figure out why. And I found out that it came out with like 30 other albums in one release. And it was probably sitting in the middle of the pile. And stations looked at the jacket. Most FM stations weren't into punk per se that much at the time. And so everybody said, it's a punk man. And so I was kind of like, oh boy, I'm not sure what I'm going to do now. But by chance, a friend of mine named Charlie Kendall, who worked at WNEW in New York and WMMR in Philadelphia, he started a station in Los Angeles called KWSC, K-West. I went over to his house. I said, Charlie, you got to hear this record. You got to hear it in headphones. And of course, we went out on his balcony first and, got ourselves, our minds adjusted a little bit. And I said, you got to listen to the headphones. And I think he probably said, okay, because I was just yapping about this new band. And he sat down and played side one, pulled his headphones off. He said, John, this is the biggest piece of crap I've ever heard in my life. And I was like deflated. And he said, John, I'm kidding you. Who the hell are these guys? And he said, let me listen to side two. He listened to side two and the same thing happened to him. He freaked out. And he said, are they any good live? I said, Charlie, I just picked up the record by accident 2 days ago. I don't know. But I do know that they're playing at the Whiskey next Saturday, opening for Blondie. And he said, we're going to go. Because if they're any good live, I'll add this record to my playlist. So we go to the Whiskey, and there's about 20 people inside the, even though they were opening for Blondie, it's like nobody knew Tom was. I mean, Tom was starting to gain some traction in England, but nobody here knew him. He would come home here, and nobody would know who he was. So he played the 40-minute set, and he walked out, normal-looking guys, cool guys, no black leather jackets. And they killed me. They killed Charlie. They killed us. I said, Charlie? He leaned over. He said, John, breakdown's going on the air once an hour, every hour, starting Monday morning. And so I went upstairs. You know, when a promotion man's got an ad for a radio station in his pocket, he goes to work. So I went upstairs to introduce myself to Tom. I said, hey, Tom, I'm John Scott. I'm the new guy at ABC Records. And he said, I don't give a damn who you are. We hate ABC Records. And I said, well, have you ever heard your record on the radio in Los Angeles? He said, no. Why? I said, well, you're going to hear it Monday morning, breakdown, every hour on the hour. And he said, bullshit. And then he called back to Stan Lynch, the drummer of the band. He said, Stan, what do you call, what did you say ABC stands for? And he said, a bunch of C, and you can figure out the rest of that. So they all started laughing. And I'm so cocky this time because I knew what I saw it, I heard it. I said, you know what, Tom, I'm going to break your career wide open, pointing at him. And again, he said, BS, this is another nut job from ABC Records, promising something that they haven't done in 8 months. And I said, okay. And he called for Brody to have us scored it. He said, get these two nut jobs out of here. And so I said one more thing. I said, Tom, my name is John Scott. And every time you hear your record play on the radio, you will think of me because I'm the one who put it on the radio for you. And again, he said, BS, just get the hell out of here. Charlie, to his worst, started playing Breakdown on Monday morning. And by Wednesday, he called and said, John, people are calling wanting to know who this band is. And they're calling by the bucket loads. And Thursday, Tower Records ordered 250 copies of this record. And, of course, the people at ABC were walking in my office going, what are you doing? And they said, this record's 8 months old. What are you trying to do? And I told them the story. And so about that time, the manager called me, and he said, John, he's an English guy. I love this English guy, Tony Dimitriotis. And he has a British accent. John, who are you? And I went, I'm John Scott. And he said, why are you telling my artist things that you cannot possibly do, like break his career? And I said, because I'm going to do it. And he said, enough. And he hung up. And 2 days later, after more stations started adding the record, I get a message. Tom Petty's on the phone. Picked up the phone, and he's got that southern drawl, and he said, John, you're serious, aren't you? I said, Tom, I'm so serious. I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do. And he said, I just want to apologize for everything I said, but everything me and the band said the other night. I want to apologize. Would you come over to my house tonight? I want to meet you. So I did, and that was like, I'm Nirvana for me. I'm flying over Laurel Canyon, going out to Reseda. And his music blaring full. We went to his house, and we went outside and talked. And I said, hey, Tom, have you ever been in any other bands? I'm like, no. He said, no, you never heard of this band. It's called Mud Crutch. And I said, you mean Depot Street? He goes, how the hell do you know the song Depot Street? I said, by chance, serendipitous or what? That was the first record I ever worked in my life as a promotion man. And he just looked at me and shook his head. And he said, I want to play you a song we're working on. Went inside and he played To Her Heart, which was on the second album. But anyway, all of a sudden, stations all over the country started having it, except for the consultants. I think Lee Abrams was the consultant at the time, and he controlled about 50 stations, and none of them were playing it. And the first stop was Dallas, and I was having breakfast with the morning guy. He was on the air, and he said, hey, John, just sit in the office, and I'll be in there in 15 minutes. And Tom Petty record had just made the charts, Billboard charts, 177. So I saw the Billboard sitting there, and I opened it up just to look at it and smile. And the big circle around it says, do not play John Scott hype. And I freaked out. He told me I couldn't do it. So I flew to Atlanta, where Lee Abrams was headquartered out of. And the other consultant, Lee Michaels, was not there. Conveniently, but I said, I demand to see Lee Abrams, and I went and saw him, and he said, we've been watching what you're doing. We got one station playing it. It's here in Atlanta. And if you talk ABC into letting us do $1 or $3 concerts, I guess they call them low-dough concerts or frequency concerts, where the tickets would be $1 or $3. So I talked to ABC and that, and we were doing $1 or $3 shows. We did about 10 of them. And he came to the first concert. And about that time, every Lee Abrams station came in, about 50 stations. And it became the most added record of the week. Probably now 10. Billboard used to have a thing called, Record World used to have a thing called Flashmaker. And it made Flashmaker of the week. And people are just kind of shaking their heads like, how the hell did this happen? And I kind of want to say the rest is history, but, Tom, huh? I guess it is. But Tom and I...
The great thing... The great thing, if I could cut in here for a second, the great thing is that Tom never forgot. You know, I mean, you maintained a relationship with Tom throughout the years, and that was his final show, what ended up being his final show at the Hollywood Bowl. Four songs into the set, Tom talked about all the friends backstage and everything. He didn't mention, he only mentioned one person by name, and that was John Scott.
Wow.
And he said that he told the story that how they were going to be, the Heartbreakers were going to be dropped by ABC until John Scott swooped in there and saved the day and broke him. And that was at his final concert just, a few weeks ago.
Right. I didn't see him backstage before the show because I didn't really want to go back there because there's a lot of people there. And I was just happy to be there at the last show. And I was in my seats. And when that happened, I literally fell out of my seat. Because he's acknowledged me before and various things, but nothing like this at the Hollywood Bowl and stopping a concert. And he dedicated "I Won't Back Down," which I didn't. And that was like, I almost put a cap on my career. It's like, holy crap, he just did this in front of 18,000 people. No, I'll stand my ground. Won't be turned. He never did forget. And we used to do, we would, he's such a generous, he was such a generous guy, a funny guy. We used to do crazy things. We would start faxing radio stations out of clear blue when the Wilbur came out going, "Hey, this is Charlie T. Wilbury, WBC in Boston." And people would be going, "Wait a minute, I just got a fax from Tom Petty." We called it fax faction. And we started making Christmas IDs at Christmas. We just did anything we could do to keep the ball rolling. And we did some of the craziest Christmas. I think you'll see them up on Facebook.
Yeah, they're up on, some of them are up on YouTube as well.
On YouTube. Yeah. And they're all ad-libbed. They're all funny as hell.
I know it looks like pudding, but I'm not going to eat any of it. Hey, this is Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and we want to say Merry Christmas, WLVQ. And while we're here, I want to wish Columbus a Happy New Year, too. And so from me and the Heartbreakers, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, WLVQ.
He was just a great guy. And he was so generous because, well, I mean, for me, 1980, there was a flood in Woodland Hills. They had a big rainstorm. It was a flood. And I think water was up to 6 feet in my house. I lost most everything, all my air checks they had, and lots of things. And the Red Cross came out and gave everybody army cots to sleep on. And I think I stayed one night in a hotel. I didn't have a lot of money then. And I said, "Well, we'll just sleep on these cots." And he called and said, "You're not sleeping on any army cots. You're coming to my house." And so my family stayed there for 30 days while we dug out the mud out of our house.
Wow.
And one other time, I moved to Hawaii and saw my home here. And I went through Hurricane Iniki. Like the first 3 months, we just built our house. And this Hurricane Iniki came storming through. And we lost our roof. We lost, again, so much stuff. And we heard the power was going to be out 6 to 8 to maybe 12 weeks. And so, you know, we're down to the last, and there's no food on the island. There's no generators. There's no anything. It's such a small island, Kauai. And I get a knock on my door. It says, "Tom Petty has sent you a generator. And you got to go pick it up at FedEx." And so I had to drive, you know, 40 miles through trees all over the place. But he sent me a generator out of the goodness of his heart. And so he just really never forgot anything. He remembered the people who helped him from the beginning. And I just can't say enough about that guy. It's I can't still, I'm really sitting here, still can't believe that this happened. I'm still blown away, to be quite honest with you. And, I mean, it was Christmas over there. It was Thanksgiving over there. It was Easter over there at his house. You know, my family, every birthdays.
Yeah, and the world owes you a thank you, John. I mean, you really, you know, it's possible that we may not have heard Tom if it wasn't for your efforts. Right. I mean, you know, there are a lot of great bands. I mean, like the thing that you told me that Warren Zane said, Tom's biographer, about, you know, there's a lot of great bands, and if they don't have the right people surrounding them, the right promotion man, they sometimes don't get on the radio, they don't break through.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's good or if it's good, if you don't have somebody behind you pushing it, it'll go nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say, John, you know, thank you. As a teenager, you know, in the late 70s, working in a pizza place, I'll never forget hearing Breakdown come over KQRS radio, which had one of the tightest playlists in the world, and, you know, hearing Breakdown. And I actually called people to tell them, you've got to hear this song. And it's really, I really appreciate what you did, because you heard what millions of other people eventually heard first. And that's amazing.
You know, as some people ask me sometimes, if MCA hadn't fired me and ABC hadn't hired me, what would have happened with Tom Petty? And I go, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, he was going to be dropped. He could have been signed by another label, maybe, probably. He could have broken the band up. He could have moved back to Gainesville, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I don't think anybody else does.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't have to find out. That's for sure.
That's for absolutely sure. We'd be missing a lot of great music, I know that.
Oh, God, yes. Well, thank you, John. And Craig, thank you so much for putting John in touch with us. It really was wonderful to hear that story.
Okay, that was an amazing story, right?
Yeah. I mean, makes me hungry for pizza.
There's a new Tom Petty box set called American Treasure with a bunch of like outtakes, rarities, B-sides, things like that.
Right.
Some live tracks, I believe, and everything. But I think John Scott is also an American treasure for what he has done for music, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, folks, let's understand that we don't want to get too deep here with Petty, you know, because I feel like Tom Petty is one of those artists who didn't leave a lot of stuff in the can. You know, he recorded stuff. He put it out on albums that he thought were important.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like Dylan where he left a whole bunch of stuff like uncut, you know, where it's like, oh, my God, you did Blood on the Tracks four times and didn't tell anyone.
Yeah, so, or Prince would be another example of that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's what I liked about Petty a lot, Jim, is that he actually took the work that he had and made it really important while he was working on it and didn't just leave it.
I think you're right, because I think he was an efficient songwriter and musician.
I think there's a lot to say about
that. I think he did a lot of work before he went into the studio, and so he kind of knew what he wanted to do,
that's
and he recorded with a purpose.
Yeah.
And then I also think he really crafted songs to get him where he wanted. And so there wasn't a lot of waste, right?
You know, and I think about that a lot with all these Dylan, you know, bootleg series that are coming out. I mean, it's only like episode 58 or whatever, you know, with Bob Dylan. And I love Dylan more than anyone else. But I love that about Petty. If something was important to him, he took everything he had and tried to make it the best he could and then cut all the waste and got on to the next thing.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, you know, we are all, I think, better people for Tom Petty being in our lives.
So. Hells yeah.
All right. Now, the rest of the week, we have some really exciting episodes.
Yeah, we're
going to
go there, I guess.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So
Strap it in, folks.
We have another American treasure about to play live on Rockin' the Suburbs. This is our latest live event. And over the next three episodes, you're going to hear the fruits of those labors.
Right? Such as they are.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's all you need to know right now. Please let us know, though, if you have any thoughts about the story that you heard or about Tom Petty in general. You can call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. Or email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or find us on social medias of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. All right, let's get to tomorrow, because this is very exciting.
Yeah, it is.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We will talk to you tomorrow.
I know it looks like pudding, but I'm not going to eat any of it.